From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of June, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will join us from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenori. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I traveled earlier today, and some of these reports actually were recorded there to Bradfordton in Illinois. That's just to the west side of Springfield for another one of our Roach Ag Marketing Illinois Grain Elevator Tours. Glad to be there. Thanks to all the folks that showed up, and we'll be looking forward to being out on the road with them again next week on Monday in the western part of the state. Check out our website, willag.org, for all of the details. And stay with us right here on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is now here. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd.
It's a rough day in Chicago. I think we probably ought to start with the oil seeds, soybeans in particular. They were down 20 cents in the lead option July contract. What did the damage, and what do the charts look like?
Well, this week's been pretty rough on the technical side of the picture on corn and soybeans. But on the other hand, wheat futures, it's been pretty well dressed up, and we're basically in wheat in a counter seasonal move higher at a time when we should actually be declining as you go on into harvest and first part of July. This year, it seems like the wheat market is in a counter seasonal move to the upside. Now, you take a look at oil seeds, soybeans especially got hit hard today. Corn got hit hard earlier in the week. It's actually been a pretty rough week for both corn and soybeans, and we have done some short-term technical damage. The question of how much technical damage we've done probably still remains to be seen, but they took a pretty good hit. My guess is what really triggered soybeans today was probably a very disappointing weekly export sales number. There was really hardly any soybean export activity over the past week. And then that combined with these high crop rating levels that we see both in corn and soybeans, some of the best in 20 years. And then when you take into account that the weather pattern hasn't locked into any kind of threatening type weather pattern, there are some areas in the Corn Belt that probably could use a rain, but at least at the moment, the pattern is active enough that the trade kind of feels that just about everybody's going to get a little shot at a rain here over the next 5 or 7 days. So when you look at high crop rating levels, a weak demand on soybeans. Now, the corn demand number was good today. But it's the time of year that we're trading supply. We got the crop planted. We had a very warm May, so it accelerated the maturity level of the crops. And things look real good here during the first week of June. And the market is basically reflecting that, Todd.
Do you think that farmers should take anything away from all of this action as it relates to longer term pricing on the board, that is, for the months of July, August, and then on into December?
Well, I think at this point in time, at least looking at some of the short term indicators, and I know when you get into a very dominant trend, your technical indicators don't necessarily give you a good clue as to what may or may not happen. But with the decline that we've seen this week, it kind of started last week, or actually 2 weeks ago when we talked, we had those kind of reversal down price actions 2 weeks ago, Thursday. They kind of showed some follow through last week. It wasn't real decisive. And then this week, the markets totally collapsed under that bearish technical action of 2 weeks ago. now we're down at the bottom end of the technical indicators where everything's kind of in the oversold category. That doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a rally, but I do think it's probably at a point where the market may begin to find some stability here. And if we can find some stability, and then we'll kind of see what these crop rating levels do on Monday and the following week. The thing I think we got going for us, at least on maybe on the positive side this year, is that the crop rating levels came out at such a high level that we really didn't have no place to go but down. Whereas in years past, we maybe started out at a lower level and then they kept increasing as the growing season went on. So that put downward pressure on it. This year, we may be in one of these situations where the best crop rating levels are early, and then they deteriorate as we go through the growing season. And that'll depend upon what kind of summer weather pattern sets up. Most of your models right now are in disagreement. They kind of flip back and forth. I'm still looking basically 2 weeks from now to see what kind of weather pattern kind of sets up around the first day of summer. And then we'll kind of take it from there. Demand news, I think, will be positive as we go down the road. But right at the moment, we're in a negotiation. We're trade negotiation of our trade policy that's been basically in effect for the past 20 years. Donald Trump is trying to shake that box up a little bit. And that creates uncertainty in the marketplace.
Indeed, it does. Hey, one other thing. You've talked about this before on the program, and we've heard over the last week or so, farmers in particular wondering whether the high for the corn market has come in this year already or not.
Well, technically, one could maybe argue that the high is in for maybe a month or two, but you can't necessarily say that for the year. I don't think you can really say that until we get that broad, big rainfall that kind of marches across the Corn Belt during the last part of June, first part of July. So the crop, I don't think, is necessarily made. It is in a position to be made. If the weather pattern stays generally favorable, then we may have seen the high point. But I wouldn't necessarily go that far yet. I think it's still early in the growing season, and there's still a lot of uncertainty going on in trade and as far as the weather pattern goes. So I wouldn't necessarily say that, but there's no doubt denying that the technical action that we've experienced here, especially this week, really tore up the overall technical picture of the market to at least be moving higher during the month of June anyway. But that doesn't necessarily mean that can't be reversed as we go on into July. One reason I say that is I always watch the first 5 days of each month, whether or not we're making highs for the year or highs, new highs or new lows, because a lot of time by the time the end of the month comes, you're headed the other direction. So since we're making lows here in the early part of June, there's reason to believe that we may be on the upswing by we get to the end of June. And then, of course, July is going to be real. July weather and August weather will be real critical to both corn and soybeans.
Hey, thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'll talk to you in about 40 minutes or so for Commodity Week, along with Merrill Crowley, Sherman Newland, and John Roach will join us as well. So it should be a good show for Commodity Week. Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you again shortly.
Okay.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, President Trump's trade strategy is showing mixed results, bringing retaliation from some trading partners, but concessions from others. South Korea gave on autos, and China now offers $70 billion in U.S. soybean, corn, and energy buys if the U.S. abandons threatened tariffs. But Mexico has slapped tariffs on U.S. pork, steel, and bourbon, joining Canada. China and the EU in retaliating for U.S. metals tariffs. National Pork Producers Council spokesman Jim Monroe says losses in Mexico for U.S. pork could simply be devastating.
It absolutely is our number one market. We're highly dependent on it. And if these tariffs remain in place for a sustained period of time, that will ultimately be a $1.5 billion hit to the U.S. pork industry.
Monroe says the U.S. sold some $1.6 billion, with a B, worth of pork to Mexico last year, or about a quarter of total pork exports. President Trump accuses Mexico, Canada, and others of trading unfairly in ag and other sectors, and aims with his high-on-again, off-again tariff strategy to squeeze concessions at the bargaining table. Monroe disagrees with this particular approach.
Respectfully, I'd have to disagree with that. It's free trade has been very beneficial for the pork industry, and it's really driven our growth, and it promises to drive our future growth if we can get out of the position of defending existing free trade agreements and get into the business of initiating negotiations to expand our free trade opportunities.
President Trump, now discouraged by the lack of progress in NAFTA talks, wants to do bilaterals with Mexico and Canada. Senior Senate Finance Member and former Chair Chuck Grassley tells Farm Reporters,
I think that North America is pretty much a unitary economy, and we ought to treat it as a unitary economy.
Well, the U.S. had an individual trade deal with Canada before the three-way NAFTA partnership produced near zero tariffs and shared exponential trade growth, making any revision to a two-way deal unlikely and raising questions of the U.S. pulling out of NAFTA and of Canada and Mexico doing their own deal. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but switch to the RFS. President Trump indicated he would not sign a White House proposal that was bad for farmers, referring to the proposal offering changes to the renewable fuel standard. The pledge followed an apparent conversation with Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. Further, the comments came the same day Ernst criticized Trump's Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt over his handling of the RFS. The proposal would have allowed for the export of RINs, renewable identification numbers, along with allowing the sales of E15. Also rumored in the proposal is a requirement that would force the EPA to reallocate biofuel allotments displaced by hardship waivers issued to refiners. On Twitter, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley called the comments by Trump great news. Well, the White House reportedly backed off the proposal because of a pushback from Ernst and Grassley, who represent one of the largest biofuel producing states. And finally today, the Farm Bill. It looks as if talks may move more smoothly in the Senate than they did in the House because of the strategy that Pat Roberts, the ranking member, and Debbie Stabenow, a Democrat of Michigan, are pursuing contrast sharply with the House's approach. Both senators have presented a unified front and vowed to draft a bill that both Democrats and Republicans can support. And that's a look at today's Ag News. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, joins us. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. What's your assessment of the market over the last week? And maybe you should take some time, too, and look forward into next week's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report for me.
Well, you know, obviously we've had kind of a rough week again. I think after we made that 429.5 high on December corn, you know, we've seen a fair amount of shedding the blink from the funds. And so, you know, technically speaking, it certainly looks like we could have a top in place, but it's awful early in the year to be putting a nail in the coffin of the corn market. So given the fundamentals that I think next week we'll continue to find out are supportive at the present time, I don't know that I want to get too awful down on the corn market just yet. I want to know more about production before we start really hurting this market too much.
Anything in next week's report that you expect to change?
I would really like to see what their estimate is on the Brazilian corn crop. Are we going to get close to 80 million metric tons? You know, what's the world carryout going to be? Are we going to go down even lower for next year, which I fully expect? I think some of the estimates we've seen, basis Reuters and Bloomberg, you know, have been fairly low. And if those come to pass, we could see some a little bit of a bullish reaction, even if the weather's good.
You know, I've been traveling around the state just a bit. I know you've traveled some, too. The crops still look really good, though farmers are worried to some respect about drought spreading from Missouri and the south central part of Iowa into other places. Is that needless at this point?
Yes. I mean, essentially, like with our farm ground, we're probably close to two-thirds of our ground's in really good shape. It's had a fair amount of moisture. The other third's hurt. I mean, we've got some corn that's actually rolling already, and that's the reason why a lot of producers are worried. It's been fairly variable this year. In the heat of May, it certainly sapped the moisture out of the ground. So it's definitely one thing to be concerned with. You know, if we do get some of this rain in the next few days, it's certainly going to help people feel a whole lot better about what kind of condition the ground's in.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
Yep, thanks for having me, John.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I've been traveling a bit today, earlier in Bradfordton, which is just to the west of Springfield, for an elevator tour. Hopefully you can find some of those up online and visit with us next week on one of them at willag.org. We'll be out in the western part of the state of Illinois. But at this time, Mike Tenor is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Tell me a little bit about the rainfall that you expect across the United States.
Well, we're going to see quite a bit of rainfall. And the reason we say that is because of the way the atmosphere is aligned at the moment. We can see that there is heat off to the south and west of the Corn Belt, but that heat is not expansive enough to block waves of energy from passing. And because of that, we're going to see a number of waves of energy pass and produce rain and thunderstorms in different areas at different times. Now, much of the next week will be dry, so it won't be raining the entire time, but there's several chances for rain at any given location. And just because of that alone, we have to forecast widespread rainfall. It looks like rainfall totals on the order of 1.5 to 3 inches will encompass most corn, soybeans, and spring wheat over the next 7 to 10 days. One other thing to keep in mind, Todd, is that once we get into the middle of next week, this pattern will break down, but along with that breakdown comes some cooler weather. We don't think the warmth that's been here for the better part of the last 5 weeks is going to last. It will at least temporarily break over the second half of next week and weekend, sending temperatures into the 70s and 80s as opposed to the 80s and 90s where they have been.
Sounds like a prescription for just what farmers would like across the bulk of the Corn Belt. What about those portions of Missouri and Iowa, the north central and south central portions of those two states that have been really dry? Will they get rainfall as well?
Well, they had quite a bit of rain in parts of those areas overnight. On Wednesday night, we saw some big rains develop in central Iowa and then move to the south through Missouri. Now, we still need more rain, but there's a lot of chances of rain in that area too, as well as the driest areas of Illinois and Indiana. It's going to be very difficult to draw up a scenario in which we don't see some big rains in some of these dry areas. So, as you know, not everyone will get hit by this, but we do think that most people will, such that by the end of next week, we'll be thinking about something else as opposed to the dry pockets that exist.
Speaking of dry pockets, we've been worried a bit about the crops in Ukraine, Russia, some other places in the former CIS.
Well, the big problems are centered on Ukraine and the southern areas of Russia. That includes nearly all of the winter wheat in Ukraine and about half of the winter wheat in Russia. If you look at rainfall over the last 60 days in Ukraine in particular, it's been the number two driest period since April 15th, or at least it will have been by the time we get into the middle of June and we give them a little more rain here over the next week. So basically one of the driest periods since 2000 in Ukraine. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that it was very wet leading into that period. So it's not like we were dry and then went very dry. We were wet and then went very dry. But normally when this happens, your wheat yields are considerably below trend in Ukraine and probably the same thing in southern Russia since they're right next door and experiencing the same weather. So this is something that will need to be monitored and we'll certainly be watching it. But over the next week or two, there's not much rain on the horizon.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.